Chapter 31.
I found it difficult to get Mr. Kitson's ewe out of my mind, but I had to make the effort because while all the sheep work was going on, the rest of the practice problems rolled along unabated. One of those concerned was the Flaxton's poodle, Penny. Penny's first visit to the surgery was made notable by the attractiveness of her mistress. When I stuck my head round the waiting room door and said, "Next, please," Mrs. Flaxton's little round face with its shining tight cap of blue-black hair seemed to illuminate the place like a beacon. It is possible that the effect was heightened by the fact that she was sitting between 15-stone Mrs. Barmby, who had brought her canary in to have its claws clipped, and old Mr. Spence, who was nearly 90 and had called round for some flea powder for his cat. But there was no doubt she was good to look at. And it wasn't just that she was pretty. There was a round-eyed, innocent appeal about her, and she smiled all the time. Penny, sitting on her knees, seemed to be smiling from under the mound of brown curls on her forehead. In the consulting room, I lifted the dog onto the table. "Well now, what's the trouble?"
"She has a touch of sickness and diarrhea," Mrs. Faxton replied. "It started yesterday."
"I see." I turned and lifted the thermometer from the trolley.
"Has she had a change of food?" "No, nothing like that."
"Is she inclined to eat rubbish when she's out?"
Mrs. Faxton shook her head.
"No, not as a rule. But I suppose even the nicest dog will have a nibble at a dead bird or something horrid like that now and then." She laughed, and Penny laughed back at her. "Well, she has a slightly raised temperature, but she seems bright enough." I put my hand round the dog's middle. "Let's have a feel at your tummy, Penny."
The little animal winced as I gently palpated the abdomen, and there was a tenderness throughout the stomach and intestines.
"She has gastroenteritis," I said, "but it seems fairly mild, and I think it should clear up quite soon. I'll give you some medicine for her, and you'd better keep her on a light diet for a few days."
"Yes, I'll do that. Thank you very much."
Mrs. Flaxton's smile deepened as she patted the dog's head. She was about 23, and she and her young husband had only recently come to Derby. He was a representative for one of the big agricultural firms which supplied meal and cattle cake to the farms, and I saw him occasionally on my rounds. Like his wife, and indeed his dog, he gave off an ambience of eager friendliness. I sent Mrs. Flaxton off with a bottle of bismuth, kaolin, and chlorodine mixture, which was one of our cherished treatments. The little dog trotted down the surgery steps, tail wagging, and I really didn't expect any more trouble. 3 days later, however, Penny was in the surgery again. She was still vomiting, and the diarrhea had not taken up in the least. I got the dog on the table again and carried out a further examination, but there was nothing significant to see. She had now had 5 days of this weakening condition, but though she had lost a bit of her perkiness, she still looked remarkably bright. The toy poodle is small but tough and very game, and this one wasn't going to let anything get her down easily. But I still didn't like it. She couldn't go on like this. I decided to alter the treatment to a mixture of carbon and astringents, which had served me well in the past. "Now, this stuff looks a bit messy," I said, as I gave Mrs. Flaxton a powder box full of the black granules, "but I have had good results with it. She's still eating, isn't she? So I should mix it in with her food."
"Oh, thank you."
She gave me one of her marvellous smiles as she put the box in her bag, and I walked along the passage with her to the door. She had left her pram at the foot of the steps, and I knew before I looked under the hood what kind of baby I would find. Sure enough, the chubby face on the pillow gazed at me with round, friendly eyes, and then split into a delightful grin. They were the kind of people I liked to see, but as they moved off down the street, I hoped for Penny's sake that I wouldn't be seeing them for a long time. However, it was not to be. A couple of days later, they were back, and this time the poodle was showing signs of strain. As I examined her, she stood motionless and dead-eyed with only the occasional twitch of her tail as I stroked her head and spoke to her.
"I'm afraid she's just the same, Mr. Herriot," her mistress said.
"She's not eating much now. Whatever she does, goes straight through her. And she has a terrific thirst. Always at her water bowl, and then she brings it back." I nodded. "I know. This inflammation inside her gives her a raging desire for water, and of course the more she drinks, the more she vomits. And this is terribly weakening." Again, I changed the treatment. In fact, over the next few days, I ran through just about the entire range of available drugs. I looked back with a wry smile at the things I gave that little dog. Powdered apicuana and opium,
sodium salicylate and tincture of camphor, even way-out exotics like decoction of hematoxylin and infusion of caryophyllum, which, thank goodness, have been long forgotten. I might have done a bit of good if I'd had access to a gut-active antibiotic like neomycin, but as it was, I got nowhere. I was visiting Penny daily as she was unfit to bring to the surgery. I had her on a diet of arrowroot and boiled milk, but that, like my medical treatment, achieved nothing. And all the time the little dog was slipping away. The climax came about 3 o'clock one morning. As I lifted the bedside phone, Mr. Facton's voice, with a tremor in it, came over the line. "I'm terribly sorry to get you out of your bed at this hour, Mr. Elliot, but I wish you'd come round to see Penny." "Why? Is she worse?" "Yes. And she's suffering now, I'm afraid. You saw her this afternoon, didn't you? Well, since then she's been drinking and vomiting, and this diarrhea running away from her all the time till she's about at the far end. She's just lying in her basket crying. I'm sure she's in great pain." "Right, I'll be there in a few minutes." "Oh, thank you." He paused for a moment. "And, Mr. Herriot, you'll come prepared to put her down, won't you?" My spirits, never very high at that time of the morning, plummeted to the depths. "As bad as that, is it?" "Well, honestly, we can't bear to see her. My wife is so upset. I don't think she can stand any more." "I see." I hung up the phone and threw the bedclothes back with a violence which brought Helen wide awake. Being disturbed in the small hours was one of the crosses a vet's wife has to bear, but normally I crept out as quietly as I could. This time, however, I stamped about the bedroom, dragging on my clothes and muttering to myself, and though she must have wondered what this latest crisis meant, she wisely watched me in silence until I turned out the light and left. I had not far to go. The Flaxtons lived in one of the new bungalows on the Broughton Road, less than a mile away. The young couple in their dressing gown led me into the kitchen, and before I reached the dog basket in the corner, I could hear Penny's whimperings. She was not lying comfortably curled up, but on her chest, head forward, obviously acutely distressed. I put my hands under her and lifted her, and she was almost weightless. A toy poodle in its prime is fairly insubstantial, but after her long illness, Penny was like a bedraggled little piece of thistledown, her curly brown coat wet and soiled by vomit and diarrhea. Mrs. Flaxton's smile, for once, was absent. I could see she was keeping back the tears as she spoke. "It really would be the kindest thing." "Yes. Yes." I replaced the tiny animal in her basket and crouched over her, chin in hand. "Yes, I suppose you're right." But still, I didn't move, but stayed, squatting there, staring down in disbelief at the evidence of my failure. This dog was only 2 years old, a lifetime of running and jumping and barking in front of her. All she was suffering from was gastroenteritis, and now I was going to extinguish the final spark in her. It was a bitter thought that this would be just about the only positive thing I'd done right from the start.